and she comes in handy during one scene later on.
Sorry. I'm such a kid.
Yeah, handy.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins from CinemaSins.
Hello, hello.
And the so-called B-team, rest of the B-team.
We are all here.
Are all in here, too. Yes. Aaron Dicer is with us.
Howdy ho, Cinerinos.
And Danae Hughes, the hit of Discord, the goddess, the goddess of Discord is here.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, we're going to be doing a mini pod.
Jiminy pod.
There we go. Jiminy pod.
That is for Ryan Gosling.
That's right. That's for all you astronauts in the 60s. We're going to be doing a mini pod of Gemini Man today.
Jiminy Man.
Yeah, Jiminy
Sorry.
Man.
Sorry. I'm done with it, I promise.
Yeah. They don't say Jiminy once in this movie.
Just they want should. To
say. They say Gemini. As they should, as God intended.
And also, I'm a Gemini, and I took a lot of offense with this movie. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah. I do believe it. One at night, I did hear some Jiminy Crickets, though.
Yeah,
I did it at one point during a night scene. We have the same birthday, right? I was just like,
that's right.
I was like, I'm a Gemini too, and I was like, oh, actually, we have the exact same birthday.
Yeah, we're one year apart. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. I discovered that because episode of Sith Pop. With him, and he was talking about it was his birthday, and that was when it was on a Friday. And I'm like, is his birthday May 20th? Or do I say that?
It's
well,
fine.
You say it on Sip Pop.
Yeah.
Is his birthday May 26th? And then when I met you, I found out we had
How
the same
birthday. How dare you let people know the day they can give me presents?
Yeah. But I will. I
What's
will,
your P.O. box?
I will enjoy being a year older Mother's for my name. Entire life.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a year younger.
Yes.
Why would I enjoy being a year older?
Gemini Man made $20 million over the weekend here in the U.S. Not good at all. It's a 100-something million budget. I don't know how it's going to do worldwide. Ang Lee, again, stretching his directorial muscles, trying to do something different here. How big of a success do you think this movie is? Somebody just start speaking.
I think it's not very big of a success at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because Will Smith has such a natural charisma. He's always great to watch on screen. He's just a fun. And this movie somehow actually saps a little bit of that from him. Like the pacing and the tone is quite a bit down. The story is so basic. There's nothing really going on. It's just every plot movement seems obvious to me. I wasn't engaged. I just didn't feel very engaged during the movie.
I'm of two minds with this movie because I kind of
that's appropriate.
There you go. I kind of want to recommend it if you're in an area where you can see it as it's, and I know we're going to have different opinions on this too. But if you, what is it called? I'm sorry.
HDR. Oh, well, it's showing HFR, high frame rate.
Yeah, and it's 120.
It was shot at 120, okay. Both eyes. Most places can only play it at 60.
Yeah,
by the way, why would you shoot one eye different?
Well, you wouldn't shoot them differently, but you would shoot, like, I just say that because there is a multiplication effect that happens in the digital file and being able to do it. So it's twice as much information if both eyes are 120 versus like a 120 non-3D.
Okay.
So, and by the way, it's showing that way. There are places that can show it in 120, that is just, one, it's not 3D.
Mm-hmm.
What did we see?
We saw 60.
Okay.
But it feels like 120 because again it's 60 for both eyes. It's hard to
If you can see it in six, if you like, for instance, if you're in the Nashville Murfreesboro area, you can go see it in 60 apparently. But if you can see it in the way it's intended to be seen, I just visually, it's so interesting. Even if you don't like that, it's just one of those things that why going to a theater could make the experience different. But this movie is so bad. Other than, like, if there weren't, like, there's a couple of really cool sequences.
Yes.
And they're probably the only reason my grade's not going to be lower than it is. Because I don't think this movie's good.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, like this movie has, like, no pulse at all. And it's not even, like, a slow burn. Like, a no burn? Is that a thing?
It
I don't
is
even
now.
Know. I mean, seriously. Like, there's no urgency. And it's an action movie. And like, just it almost feels like nothing happens.
Yeah.
And Will Smith, to go with your point, he's supposed to be like this assassin. Obviously, we'll talk about spoilers later, but he's supposed to be this assassin. He's supposed to be the best assassin in the world because they're always the best fucking assassin in the world. They can shoot people from with their eyes closed from 8,000 feet away. But he's supposed to like hate his life, and he hates that this is the only good thing he can do and stuff. So I get that. But then when it gets to be where he's on the run because there's people trying to kill him, which is like 25 minutes into the movie, he's acting the fucking same. Like, he's still just like – he's like Dante in Clerks. Like, I shouldn't have – I wasn't supposed to be here today. Like, that seems to be his attitude the entire movie. Like, that's the level he's on. So I don't know if he's phoning it in. I don't know if that's writing. I don't know what that is, but it's really disappointing.
Danae, what do you think? It's okay to say you liked it.
I did not like it.
I was hoping somebody
just wanted to make sure that you know you're in a safe place.
Thank you.
And if you said, hey, I kind of like this, I think you guys are giving this movie a little bit of a hard time.
This movie is amazing.
Uh-huh.
But it's not.
Yeah.
There's parts of it I agree that I think were really good. And there's two movies going on. There's the movie that you're watching, because we did see it in the high frame rate, and in 3D. So it's like, so there's like this visual thing that your brain is, you're thinking about how clear you can see the actors and the actresses, and you're thinking about like, oh, the scenery is really beautiful. Like, there's some shots that show the sky and the night sky, and everything's just popping so beautifully. Or even the boat from above on the water, and it's just like, oh man, this is really gorgeous.
And add to the technical aspects that we haven't mentioned yet, you have a fully digital young Will Smith is also a technical achievement as well. So you've got all these technical achievement things going on.
Yeah, and so you're
and
watching
that's a,
it.
That's a good achievement, I
so
would
that's
think.
Like one thing that's going on, and you can judge the movie just based on that. And then you think about the story that's going on, and it was, I would totally agree. It not only fell flat, it was confusing how flat it was.
Mm-hmm. And I don't mind the simpleness. Like, you, I mean, that's fine. You just want to have an assassin on the run story. There's been plenty of those made very well, but this one just isn't.
Yeah.
And I can't really quite put my finger on what, and I don't even honestly know exactly what this movie is about or trying to say. Because if you had me repeat this movie, like what the story was after, right after we got out, I don't know that I could do it.
Well, I have ideas on that, but I want to hear what Chris has to say about the movie.
So yeah, it's weird when you're in the middle of a movie and you're like, why am I not liking this?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. There's nothing particularly just horrible about it. It's just that, why is it that I'm not getting into this? And one part of it is, I feel like they had a premise that they could have gone way more into and just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like, because we'll get into this in the spoilers, it's by the end of it, you're like, why didn't they do a lot of other things with this?
Yeah.
They could have done so many things with this that would have been like, you went in a mind-blowing Christopher Nolan-type movie almost by the end of it. But you guys are right about how it's so basic about everything. There's just nothing. And even Clive Owen, who is a bad guy in this movie, his plan is not, it doesn't seem terribly evil.
I mean, the one of the worst things you can say about the movie is I forgot Clive Owen was in it like 5 minutes after I got out of the theater. He does nothing in this movie,
The only thing that they do that's right off the bat, you're like, oh, dealing with an evil. Is it? And maybe have to wait until we get into spoilers, because we talk about the very beginning of this movie, which really just is what rockets this movie into its
bottle
plot.
Rockets.
Bottle rockets this movie. Yeah, like a weak cherry bombs this movie into its
a dud.
Yeah. But there's a thing at the beginning of this that I was like, there wasn't any reason to do that, was there? There wasn't any, like...
Oh, interesting. I'm really curious what you're talking about.
Yeah,
now.
I want to get into the spoilers here in a minute. I want to sort of get our grades first so that everybody kind of knows what we think about it. But yeah, I think they took a premise that could have been way better, had a lot more substance to it, and instead... And I know that... criticism is not what a movie should be. You grade it on what
it is. I struggle with that.
I just feel like with this premise, they could have done so much more
I still think you can talk about that, though. I mean, maybe that doesn't affect your grade, but like, I think you can talk about that, like what you would have liked it to have done.
I'll just keep it at they could have done more. I was thinking of a whole bunch of stuff during this, and yes, I know that my ideas are no better than anybody else's ideas about where they could have gone with this movie. It's just that I would have preferred it that they take a premise like this and just like really given us something more than what they did. So yeah. I think they decided to just strip it down bare bones and just like, let's make, this story about Will Smith and his, I mean, this is in the trailer, his clone. And does Will Smith ever have to be bad? We can't make him bad, right? Never bad. He's not a bad guy.
He's an accidental bad guy.
Right. He's an accidental bad guy.
Yeah.
So let's make it about their relationship. Yeah.
So what's your grade?
I'm going to go D plus on this one.
Okay. What about you guys?
And we will talk more about this. I guess we don't even need to wait to spoilers, but the technical stuff blew me away enough that I'm all the way up at a C plus, and it's almost only
because
I want to give it just that little plus above.
I have a question though, because you saw it in
it both ways.
So before you saw it with it being in a high frame rate, mm-hmm. was it the same grade?
I mean, maybe it would have been a C instead of a C plus, but even in the non 3D low frame rate, that young Will Smith stuff is mind blowing to me. And so, like, there's enough there. And that's the weird thing about grading is what do you take into account? And for me, I want to make sure my grade indicates a little bit of if I'm recommending it or not. And so, you know, if I go with a D plus or even a C minus, I don't want people to misunderstand. Yeah. Don't see this. It's trash. Because like you said, I think there's some fascinating stuff going on here technically.
If you're a visual person at all, or if you just enjoy.
I would even throw the action scenes in there. I really enjoyed the action scenes.
I agree.
In this
movie. There's a couple of really stellar action sequences in this. But I'm at a C. And that's solely almost all visual. And like I said, I would recommend it to somebody that's if they can't experience it at least close to the way it's supposed to be experienced, because that is very unique. I've never watched a movie where I literally it felt like I was just looking out my window. That's a really weird experience, and we can even talk about that. But or like I said last night, it kind of looked like a BBC drama. I don't know why, but it did.
Well, that's because that's exactly what they look like.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to apologize for that, or because it's exactly what
I'm not making fun. I made the joke that like at the end of that, if they had said next week on Killing Eve, I would have been like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we're doing.
That's something I'm not all the way on board with yet, because I feel like movies should be taking you into another world that is not ours, not something that looks so realistic that it's right there in front of us. It's like we're seeing it being filmed right in front of us. I'm not that big on that kind of realism. I know that the 24 frames per second that rate was because they couldn't go higher back in the day, and we just sort of adopted that as forever 24 frames per second and everything. But there's something to it, right? There's something that makes you feel like you're watching a movie, and now I'm watching like somebody's home videos.
Well, and I don't know, and that's the thing, until we see multiple of these, I'm sorry, Dan, I didn't mean to cut you off in your grade, but until we see multiples of these, I don't know if we're going to know if they can do different visual things with it, because that's the thing about movies, right? You can have completely different looks. Like, you can have a movie like Dark City and a movie like Jurassic Park and Terminator, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like they're darker looks, or they're lighter looks, or, you know, they're like something like a Dario Argento film, like they're really colorful and there's just, you know, like almost like just, you know, blood's coming out of the screen at you. And I mean, I don't know that you can do that with this, because I just feel like this is just going to be like real world.
There is some sort of found footage quality, right, to it,
where
like the effects and all the action seem to really actually be happening, and there's no sort of sense of like, well, that's fake or whatever. They had stunt doubles there. It really does feel like this is actually happening. And I enjoyed that, too. I enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's what I liked about it.
But anyway.
Which grade?
So I don't usually grade movies. This is interesting to think about, because I think if it's action, you know, maybe it would be like a C or something like that. Mm-hmm. But because I did like the action scenes. I think it was really clear because of it being shot, you know, so well. I can actually follow the action, and sometimes that gets confusing. So that's kind of high. I actually enjoyed the acting. Maybe it was muted because it is shot in such a high frame rate that it would be overacting if they really emoted. And so you're watching like these characters who are kind of more serious because they've got serious jobs. And so they're not like really super joyful or, you know, goofy. It's a more serious acting, but at the same time, since it's so clear, it's like you're just looking at their face and you can kind of read what they're thinking in a way. And I was really intrigued by that. And I actually really enjoyed Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I had to look that up.
Yeah.
Because I didn't remember who that was.
Yeah, she's great. Like, I feel like that's one of the few actors I've seen come up through like a Final Destination mm-hmm. type of whatever.
Which
and
is
then,
a super fun movie, by
the
way.
Yeah. And I know that she was in stuff before that and everything.
Oh, she was in 10 Cloverfield Lane. Yeah, that's where I remember her from.
That's where I fell in love with
that. And Scott Pilgrim.
She's John McClane's daughter in Die
Hard. That's
interesting. Live for Your Die
Hard. I really liked her. I thought she did great. And then there's the CGI, which has its pluses and minuses. And then the locations are beautiful. And so it's like a kind of trending really great. And then it gets the plot and story, which is like an F. So I think I have to sort of combine all of those together mm-hmm. and come out somewhere around a D plus C. Mm-hmm. Minus.
Yeah. Okay. That seems fair.
But yeah, the Mary Elizabeth Winstead started out where you were like, okay, she's serviceable or whatever. But it's pretty clear over the years she's really dedicated herself to like becoming.
Well, and her character is kind of interesting in this one because you kind of at first you don't know who she is and what she's in the movie for. Like, is she going to be a love interest? Is she going to be, you know, this or that? And you just don't know why they're putting a female into it. Usually it's love interest. Let's just be honest. It's like, oh, you're going to fill this like role. And it's kind of fun to see that develop a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So. She was just out of curiosity. I looked this up. She did a bunch of television at first, like Touched by an Angel. She apparently was on a bunch of episodes of the soap opera Passions.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think that's the one with like the killer.
That was
dummy.
The crazy one. Yeah. Oh, that was the one with all the like science fiction in it.
But it looks like her first movie was The Ring 2.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
She is young Evelyn. So. Yeah. And then she, Sky High.
Totally oh, yeah, Sky forgot. High.
And
yeah.
then after Sky High, she does Final Destination 3, and then it kind of, you know, she's where she is now. I liked her, too, but I will say I didn't find her character as interesting as you did, and I kind of wondered, as much as I love seeing her pop up on the screen, anytime she's there, I'm always like, why don't I see more Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
Yeah.
I couldn't really figure out why she was there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's the plot. I think that's the
writing, too. Yeah, I do, too. Oh, I do, too. It has nothing to do with her.
Yeah,
absolutely
he needs somebody to play
her.
Off of the entire time, and like, and she comes in handy during one scene later on.
Sorry. I'm such a kid.
Yeah, handy.
wah.
Let's get into spoilers.
Let's do it.
No spoilers!
Kevin Spacey is Kaiser Soze.
Miss Luke's father is actually Darth Vader. She's the sister and the daughter. They just
No. I'm reading the books.
So yeah, the thing at the very beginning of this that I was like, by the end of this movie, I was like, okay, I don't understand this. So they get Will Smith. He's the best ever, you know, he's Deadshot, right?
Yeah.
And they get him. He's the best ever. They set up this whole thing where they have this bioterrorist on a train and he has to hit him mm-hmm. from 2 kilometers away. Yeah. And he has to hit him at this one window. And if he doesn't, oh my God, he's a bioterrorist. No telling what he could get away with. And then we find out he's not a bioterrorist at all. And then I'm like, why did they have to get a sniper then to kill that guy? If he was just Joe from analytics or whatever he was.
They just didn't want him giving up information, right?
Right. If he's not that big of a deal, then why don't you just poison him somewhere? Or why don't you? There's no reason to go through all this, right?
And they might have been lying, but didn't they even tell Will Smith that he was like the fifth guy they tried to get him to kill?
Right, but I got the sense that weren't lying about that.
No, it sounds like they were having a hard time taking this guy out.
Yeah,
for sure.
Like, no, I mean, I didn't the movie establish though that that guy wasn't a bioterrorist, that they shot him because he knew
yeah,
things?
I thought he was the one that like had the knowledge.
He knew about the cloning and stuff. That's why they shot him, and that's why he died. But if he's not a big deal, if he's not that hard, if he's not somebody who's like hiding in the shadows and everything, this guy's not hard to kill. They don't need to hire Will Smith to do it.
I didn't get that at all.
Maybe he had like some super expensive security detail that he hired or something.
Didn't look like he had a super expensive security detail on that train.
You could tell us that.
And like, there's a whole point where it's like, oh, could have killed a kid. Oh my God, could have killed a kid during that whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, but the emotional trauma of seeing someone murdered in front of you, that's okay.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Yeah.
Well, apparently everybody videotaped
it. They have a dude on the train.
That's what I was just about to say. You've got a guy buy right there three seats from him. Like, why do you need
there's
to take
a dude
the
on the train? Why doesn't he just like do one of those, like, you know, the gun barrel comes out of the suitcase and he just shoots him? And then,
and I don't think it was that guy, but I really thought that was the guy from Hereditary for a second. There was but when I thought that, I was just thinking, man, if he would just start crying now,
he was allergic to bees and they just shot him on the train with bee venom.
Ooh, yeah, you know? It could be that.
It's a great plot.
Somebody
movie.
Does get shot with bee venom.
Oh
in this
my
movie.
God,
yeah.
That I mean, if you don't mind jumping around, that
no, not at all.
That bee venom thing slayed me in the, like, the first time I saw it, I'm just going, how does a man who is deathly allergic to bees not carry an EpiPen around with him everywhere he goes?
Right.
I know people with bad allergies. They carry EpiPens.
Yeah. It would be
my mother-in-law has two in her
not
purse
only that,
at all times.
He is the most intelligent, smart, you know, human who does everything right.
But also, that whole scene is about the clone trying to figure out if Will is actually him or not.
Yeah.
And wouldn't the DNA prove that? Like, wouldn't he be like, hey, I'll just take some of the blood that's all over my body from beating you up several times, and I'll go get that compared in a lab. Why do you have to shoot him with bee venom to prove that he is who he says he is?
Not only that, nobody is telling you he's not anymore. Even your dad is like, yeah, we did this thing, man. Like, there's nobody in your life who is saying this isn't true.
Yeah.
Why do you, what more
I know
do
what
need?
I'll do. I'm going to get bee venom, and then I'm going to, you know, pink.
Yeah, well, and it also serves, I guess, to show that he's on their side because he goes over immediately
and
saves
him.
Yeah,
him.
No,
yeah.
That's the point.
That's
for
the
sure.
whole point. But you're right. Why doesn't he have something on the ready? And like they get very concerned about it immediately and everything. By the end of it, and it's also pretty laughable because there's a big scene at the end where are they in Atlanta by the end of
the
yes,
the end takes
place
in Georgia.
Yeah,
and there's this big scene where they, you know, they've got a tank set out on the, like, you know, Peachtree Street or whatever, and like they're ready to kill Will Smith and everything, and then Clive Owen sends the clone in to kill him and everything. And then while he's waiting for that, somebody in a helmet, we don't know who that is, somebody in a helmet shows up and Clive Owen gives him the nod and says, yeah,
who
time
looks
to
like
go.
Snake Eyes.
Right. And I thought it was funny because of all, so we know this is another Will Smith clone immediately. There's no real surprise to this at all. But he goes in, and then, like, after they kill him, they're like, well, we got to find out who this is, even though 100 other people with helmets have come in and tried to kill him before. But this guy's special. We got to know his identity.
There was even that guy with the Jason mask on. I mean, it looked like, it wasn't a hockey mask, but it looked like a Mad Max villain or something. He was up there, like, shooting the, do you remember this?
Oh, yeah, the turret.
Yeah,
he had a mask on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They didn't go back to him.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't even kill him.
But, yeah, by the end of it, you're wondering, why aren't there, I mean, there might be, actually. They never really answer that question because there's a thing where Will Smith talks to his old handler guy. And he said, and the old handler guy is like, all right, well, we made sure that he stopped that program and there are no more clones.
Yeah, his exact words are, there's no more clones. We checked.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
And Will
Did
Smith's
you
like,
check?
And
okay,
Will Smith's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Just completely
thank
buys
you for
it.
Checking. Yeah. I appreciate
love
that.
I'm sitting by Chris watching this scene and I love that we were both on the same page because after they take that helmet off, I'm like, oh no, that's crazy. And then Chris is like, yeah, never saw that coming.
Did you hear the guy beside me?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I had movie talkers beside me. Yeah. The whole time.
Oh, yeah.
And during that scene, he was like, what?
Yeah. I did.
Come on, man.
They were the ones that kept laughing at everything, too. Yeah. There were a lot of people laughing. And I was like, is this funny?
I think this
I'm
why
not trying to be a dick.
The
but.
Plot doesn't work. There's all these opportunities to build this sort of, like, you know, maybe a different reveal. Like, maybe that there was a whole warehouse of clones that they have to go fight, you know, together or something and have these major battles where you have, we'll say, Will Smith and then the first clone, which has emotions and feelings and pain, and then the next clone we see that's revealed has been genetically mutated to not have any emotions or pain, and so they're more of a war machine in that way and less human is kind of the premise of it. Well, that's where the movie should kind of go, and I feel like if they had cut out, like, Jack or whatever his name was, who was on the boat, who gave the information about how he needed to go to Bangladesh. And maybe some of the backstory with the guy who did the fighter jet. It's like, this is a 2-hour movie. And by the time you get to the, like, 90-minute mark is when you're thinking, this is where the movie should start. is in this moment here, and give us just like a 15 or 20 minute, you know, pickup. We didn't need to see, like, maybe see him shoot his way out of the house when the government turns against Will Smith and suddenly he's like this prized person who wants to retire. And now, you know, they're coming after him because he, you know, is going to go figure out the secret or whatever. And so the government starts to come after him, which is why he's running. Maybe start there and then just less conversation with the people.
But I think we feel that way because the action is the only stuff in the movie that works.
Yeah.
I think if the other stuff works, because they're, I think they're trying to do something with that other stuff. I think this movie is trying to be about facing your own demons, about, you know, looking at yourself in the mirror. How many times do we need to hear about mirrors or see mirrors
true
in this movie?
True battle friendship.
Yeah. So it's trying to do something metaphorically about looking within, looking without, all that kind of stuff. There's a little bit of meta-ness. You know, you talk about what this movie is about. There's a little bit of meta-ness with Will Smith's, like, career, like, or even acting in general. Like, the idea that these digital actors are going to come, you know, and do what we do but not have to get paid and, you know, not have, you know, to deal with the diva-ness of actors and the emotion. Like,
but
there's some meta-ness there that the movie
does not come across.
Though. No, it doesn't. But I'm saying if that stuff worked, maybe we're more engaged in those earlier conversations and relationships. But because the action's the only stuff that works, you're right. It feels like it should just start with that.
And
stuff.
I mean, granted, they could have changed a lot. But this is also one of those situations where this is a screenplay that's been bounced around for years.
Yeah.
And there's other people attached and other actors attached. And then finally, somehow, Ang Lee and Will Smith got together and were like, we got to really make this. But I can't even figure out, like, I'm really curious to know if they did change some stuff because I don't know why this screenplay, out of, like, all the possible screenplays out there, would have been so interesting that, like, all these people were trying to do it and, you know,
movie. I read it was originally supposed to be Tom Cruise, that Ang Lee went after Tom Cruise first.
And, I could totally see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Will Smith is not the problem here. I mean, granted, because even though we're talking about, it seems very, he seems very nonchalant about everything. He doesn't have a whole lot of emotion. I mean, I think that's just written on the page. I think that's what the character is supposed to be like, and he's doing his best. I mean,
he's an assassin who has basically lost a lot of that because that's one of the big things that they talk about.
But it's just weird to me when he starts, you know, I mean, he does, like, show some emotion in the sense that he makes sure Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character's safe, and he makes sure his friend's safe, although he does a terrible job of that eventually. But he still, to me, just his, the way he was acting in those scenes, though, was just like, God damn it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to deal with this shit today. Like, it almost felt like I forgot milk.
Yeah.
Here's something else the movie did that I didn't, it did it a couple times. There are these periphery characters that are only there for, like, a scene, and then they're killed off, but they're Will Smith's friends.
Mm-hmm.
And in both the cases I'm specifically thinking of, Marino was the guy he worked with, and he called him.
Yeah,
he's trying to save him. And I kind of thought they had a good chemistry, and they were
not
fun together.
Guy.
Yeah, exactly. And then the guy on the boat that, you know, warns him about, there was also a warmness there and a good relation, a camaraderie. I like those characters, and I kind of wish, you know, but the movie wanted to kill them off, and it gave them both character flaws in an obvious way that I was just like, you don't always have to do that. Like, movies always, when they're going to kill somebody off, they give you one thing where you can be like, it's okay that they die. You know? So he's cheating on his wife on the boat.
Right.
So, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And the other guy's, like, videoing the thing and being a little aggressive about that. And like, okay, well, maybe you can. I wish movies would be like, they can have a great camaraderie, be a great guy, and, you know.
And we can still die.
And we can still kill them off.
And then
you know?
his other friend later dies, the guy from
the pilot.
The guy from Rogue One.
Well,
Benedict Wong.
Yeah, Benedict Wong. Thank you. I can never remember his name.
We will mark this down as the moment in history that Danae knew a name of an actor.
I have IMDb in front of
me,
guys.
And that could have been a cool scene, but, like, they just kind of, like, he dies in that car explosion, and then it's like, oh, now we got to go do this whole twist.
But for some reason, there was no, like, I didn't feel anything. I wasn't feeling anything. And I wonder if it's because I was distracted by the visuals or if I was, I don't know. It was such an interesting. I don't know.
And this is, again, I'm going to go back to where I feel like this movie really sort of wrecked itself, was that the Will Smith clone he cannot be a bad guy. He's got to be struggling with his inner turmoil and everything. I wish he had just been a bad guy the entire time
And that Will had to take him out?
And he had to take him out. And that
that's an interesting movie.
Yeah, it would have been.
Or maybe even he takes Will out. I mean, yeah. that's an interesting idea.
Either
you know,
way.
Something. But and, yeah, or, him being or, in college and, happy is bullshit.
And you can have, yeah, I know, that ending. That ending, I was like, this is already too long as it is.
6 months later.
Yeah, this is already too long as it is, but that whole college thing lasts another like 8 minutes.
Like
something.
The three girls just hanging off of him while he's walking.
Well, and it's the worst. aspect of the CG character.
It is. In the daylight, you can see how digital his character is.
But there are moments when that CGI was like,
oh, it's,
whoa.
It looks flawless at times.
Did everybody like the motorcycle scene? I did.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great in that whole sequence. I mean, it just looked like I was watching Fresh Prince of Bel-Air on a motorcycle.
And you would think this would be different, but watching it in HFR, it was even better than watching it in regular. And I think for whatever reason, when the rest of the actors are also so sharp and defined, the digital actor, which is sharp and defined, feels more meshed. When I watched it without the 3D and without the HFR, it was still good, but I noticed a little bit more of kind of the awkward movements, the awkward eye stuff, and just some different things. But
So there's this when the scene starts, Will Smith jumps onto a what kind of a motorcycle is it called?
I don't know.
I don't know.
A motorbike?
It's more of a motorbike, like a cross. Yeah.
I think it actually
it's like a sports bike.
I think there is a point
sports
where
bike.
It actually does show you what the brand is, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
but
it's one that whenever the engine goes like
yeah, it's a sports bike. It's not a hog.
Yeah, but it's not even like a Buell or something. It's more anyways, sorry. Yeah.
It's chopper baby.
Yeah, it's like one where you like it's like a jumper one.
I
am sorry, I don't know my motorcycle terminology. But anyhow, so he's going straight down the middle of our view through the streets. And what's interesting is a lot of times in those, you know, they'll cut away and then they'll show another angle and they're cut away. But there's this whole sequence where we're following so closely that I was kind of impressed with the stunt man because he's just like going up to the curb and then he hits the curb and then like he ran into a car and it just was all really well done and the control that person had to have on the bike because there's no way that wasn't actually a stuntman on a bike. That wasn't like the face was CGI to make it look like Will Smith, but the person driving, and because it was so clear, it felt like a video game or something where you're like controlling this bicycle through the streets, and I really enjoyed that.
HFR stuff is the future for a few reasons, but one of them is because I think the generation that's growing up now is used to seeing video this way, whereas our generation isn't. You know, we're used to 24.
Well, you mentioned last night I record on my phone in 60
frames. You record
in
high frame rate on your phone.
There's no doubt about this because my nephew, whenever I go over and visit them and they have and TV comes on, it's doing that whole smoothing thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, this is not how the movie was made. You know, this is dumb.
This
I don't
is
like
fake.
It.
Yes.
Yeah. But they're like, oh, I love it this way. And it's like, okay, well. I can't argue.
I don't play video games. So you're saying it's like the video game character.
I'm saying
now.
They see it in video games. I'm saying they see it on TikTok. I'm saying like, you know, we film on our phones.
That's true.
In a much clearer form. Like I think their brain is going to know that as normal.
Yeah.
You know, so.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I also was really impressed, if you think about it, the makeup on the actors and actresses. Like it just looks like it's either they're not wearing makeup or they're doing the makeup part of the whole production of the movie is getting so good at making, if you're going to wear makeup that just looks like your face.
Right.
Because we're literally seeing every pore on someone's face.
For sure.
You
like,
know?
Yeah, I mean, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, they make it, she's never been so like normal.
She's
looking.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that because that, you know, it wasn't like a super done up situation. Because I think like if in ones that are not quite this clear, there's a lot of places for the movie to hide. And that's one thing that's a little distracting, but also neat. Like the places we go.
Yeah.
There's this courtyard that Will Smith goes into. Was it Budapest? I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was.
And this, you know,
I don't know. Hey, if you
no, it's Colombia.
Colombia. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you have a Gulfstream, you can get five countries and
in
continents
a day.
Well, and he can find somebody who will give him that Gulfstream.
In that same day.
In that same day.
And the explanation
is.
Yeah,
when they said something about
I know somebody.
I think I know a guy.
Yeah.
When they said something about that being the same day, I was like, wait. What the fuck did they just say?
Yeah.
And thank God they decided to sleep because that was definitely a sin in my mind. You know, I'm like, oh, come on. You can't do this and not sleep. But anyhow, some of the places that they go, it's just, you know, you've got like loose rocks over in the corner and your eye is so clearly going to the background that in a regular movie, that stuff is just background stuff. You don't even see it. You're focusing on who the camera wants you to focus on. But here, your eye can focus on anything it wants to. And that, and I think they do a pretty good job of this working in the favor of the movie. Again, it's just the plot doesn't really
I thought the Columbia stuff was beautiful.
Yeah, it was
the
really,
way the
really
colors popped.
Yeah.
And the, like there were some kids playing in a fountain in the background.
Yeah.
It was just like, I was like being there.
As I was telling Aaron, the I liked how it was during action scenes with the the high frame rate.
Yeah.
I did not like it when it was just people regularly just talking because that's where it just felt too fakey, too home video, too whatever to me. There's not really any way you can split it up, though. So, I mean,
no,
it has
really.
To be it has to be that way. And, you know, you talking about it being the future and everything, maybe they'll refine some things over the next
few
years.
They have since The Hobbit.
Yeah.
This looks a million times better than The Hobbit did in HFR.
Well, but don't you think that's because The Hobbit, they're, like, wearing prosthetics? They're
that
wearing,
could be part of it,
you know,
but I also think it's the process of the way they process it, the way they shoot it. They're understanding more about the cameras. By the time James Cameron puts out Avatar, I bet it looks even better.
Yeah, because that's the one thing that we always forget because we're so, like, in this, like, instant now, you know, whatever world we live in is that when we see something we're like that doesn't work and then so then the advances that happen later don't happen as quickly as they could because everybody's like that sucks and so there's no money going towards it and there's no you know it goes for almost anything
and
know?
At some point there's always a balance right because at some point you become the person complaining about there's no film grain anymore you know I'm not seeing the little hairs on the you know the film and that's what film really is and you know
and I mean I'm not all the way there but I will just go back and say I just am concerned there's got to be a way to do this but like I said like directors that have very unique looks and unique styles like Shyamalan Chazelle. I mean, can they still have their style filmed like this?
Yeah, it's. I mean,
you think they can't? See, I don't. That's what I'm saying. I don't know that they can because this looked very.
No, I mean, I hear what you're saying.
This looked very like, and this probably didn't help the movie either. That the movie was bland, but it looked bland. And Ang Lee is a visual guy. I mean, like he has some. Even if the movie's not good, it's usually visually appealing, and this one really wasn't. You know, outside of the action sequences.
Yeah, it's fascinating to pay attention to, especially in 3D. You know, we're so used to deep focus, those kind of things where you've just got, you know, whatever's in the foreground and focus and the background is blurry.
Yeah. Which still bugs me. Why can't they do that? Because, like I said last night, Orson Welles figured this out in Citizen Kane in 1941 or whatever. Yeah. Like, they can't figure out a way to keep both of them in
focus?
Well,
yes, they split diopter is the thing you'll hear a lot of people talk about where you use a couple different lenses. But yeah, anyways, yeah, I think a talented director is going to work within whatever technology.
Maybe
it'll
be like 3D, where like some of the better examples of 3D is when you had directors like Scorsese with Hugo or Cameron, or like those are the ones that were like, this is a good use of 3D because these are people.
Yeah, they use it as a tool instead of a gimmick.
You need somebody who has a really good eye and knows how things, you know, when things look fake and when things look real and when things, you know, the little details that make things look.
But like, do you think like would you want to go see a Brett Ratner film? I mean, that's just
no.
I don't know why that popped in my head. But
the answer
saying,
is
like,
no.
Whoever
you
say,
no,
whoever the equivalent of Brett Ratner is right now, you want to go see that? Like, you want to see Michael? Maybe Michael Bay could do something.
I will tell you this, and again, I am the outlier in this. I know it. That's fine. I want to see every movie this way. I every scene of every movie, just because I know, and like I said, I know I'm way the outlier on this, but for me, the wow factor is just like I'm just. I love seeing technology advance.
I think some movies, it would work super well. And I think that this is an example of it working well in a lot of ways, but the plot was not up to par with the visual.
Well, that's another
if there
thing.
Was a, because you know, you're talking, Jonathan, about like, here's how 3D works well and when it's used as a tool.
Yeah.
Well, if someone can, like a director can figure out how this high frame rate is a tool and understand the psychology of we, the people who are consuming the media, need it to kind of have a something, I don't know, that we can kind of sink our teeth into more than it looking like a couple friends that decided to go make a home video, which is, I totally agree with you. That's, it has that kind of feel to it because it's so real. It looks, it looks fake. It's so real. It looks fake. So, I think that there are some movies I'm totally fine, especially if the director gets that this is a tool, it's a way to tell a story, and then they can figure out how to use it as part of the storytelling. But I don't know that I want to see something like, I'm looking at IMDb and Zombieland is up here.
Yeah, so, how to lose a guy in 10 days.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
I'm down, man. Bring it on.
I don't know.
Revenge of the Nerds 2, Nerds in Paradise.
For me, I just go back to all, like, all the close-ups, and I was in awe. Every time there was an
close-up,
I was just like...
But, like, one that needs prosthetics, one that needs, like, if Zombieland is going to be, like, hitting a whole bunch of CGI characters with bats or something.
Right.
Unless they have an insane budget for every zombie being perfect, it would look like trash.
Well, but doesn't all technology go through this? Didn't sound go through
Absolutely.
This when sound was introduced? You know, like, we can only do certain things and we have to figure out how to make,
I think,
you know, colorization. When colors start, like, every technology goes through this. But
they were putting, like, the microphones and the plants that were on the table and stuff.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that has to be developed. Right now, I'm not liking what I see.
Right.
But
Before we get done with this, though, I want to talk about the product placement in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Coca-Cola.
The HFR product placement.
Budweiser.
The Coca-Cola thing, though, is what I want to talk about because I found this so odd. Okay, so there's this older guy character who I guess ends up kind
of... He's the handler.
He betrays him and... but anyways,
the sense that he really didn't have a say in it.
Yeah, there's this older guy character, maybe kind of a father figure to Will Smith's character. I don't know, whatever. He's only in like a couple of scenes.
The movie's not interested in letting us know.
But they randomly throw in that he's a recovering alcoholic, I guess. But like, it has nothing to do with anything. And in both scenes where like he's about to take a drink, a Coke can or Coke bottle like comes into the screen from Will Smith, like, no, you should have this. So like, I'm sitting there thinking, like, was Coke like, we will totally do your movie, but what we want to do is a very specific thing where we say, if you're a recovering alcoholic, Coke is there.
Our
for
shit
you.
Is healthier.
Yes. That's the only thing I could think of, that because the recovering alcoholic thing didn't even make sense. Like, I mean, I don't know why it was in there.
Mm-hmm.
It served no purpose except to have a Coke product placement.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was such a weird angle to take.
This isn't product placement, but you bringing this guy's alcoholism for no reason, you know, in this movie reminds me, was it Law and Order that had a season finale where this woman's sexuality was not a part of any part of the season? And then by the end of this one season, because I guess there was contract disputes or whatever, she gets fired, and then she goes, Is this because I'm a lesbian?
And
he's like, no. And this came out of nowhere. There was never any mention of what she was.
My wife is a huge Law and Order fan. We were watching that episode live, and it was, that was the most insane thing ever. I can't remember that actress's name. I can picture her clear as day.
Is this because I'm a lesbian?
She
was
like,
of course not.
She was like the DA, the DA's lawyer, the one they always went to for the cases and stuff. Mm. But
you know, I just thought about something as we wrap up. I feel like one of the reasons I didn't ever sink into it, I'm just now realizing it, is because from the main character, every single character, you don't know if you can trust them. There's not one character on the screen that you're really clear of who they are.
That 1% really sucks, doesn't it, today?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Even the lead himself, you know, like at the end, he calls that handler, and the handler's like, everything is good. Like you were saying earlier, everything's fine. You know, we went and checked, blah, blah, blah. Like, we can't trust him. We can't trust his word.
Mm-hmm.
And why would we ever believe that a higher government agency wouldn't be coming in to wrap up those guys that just survived? Like, that was Gemini the top of the government? No, it was like a secret lab, so somebody else was probably invested too. So then it's just this really simple quick wrap up that's like, we're just gonna slap a bow on this, call it done, it's already been 2 hours, thanks for being here, guys. But like, the girl, we don't ever really know 100% if she in, is she out,
because
she was a double agent for a while. She was spying on him, and then like the kid, he's been trained to be a murderer by the person that hates them, but then he's okay. But is he really? Because that doesn't make any sense. Why would he suddenly be completely okay? I mean, his dad just beat the crap out of him up on, you know, so anyways, but every single person has this sort of like wishy-washy, and there's no one that I'm really rooting for except for maybe the pilot, and he dies a fiery death. I don't know.
I tell you, I am glad that this is not doing that well, because you know, future Gemini Man movies would make that Gemini lab like Umbrella in the Resident Evil movies. Yeah. It would be exactly
or
like
Treadstone,
yeah. Anything. It's going to be just like that, where it's like, oh, you thought you got into the real plot of this, but that was just scratching the surface, you know. And there's
coming 2022.
And then, even if you liked the first one, by the time they get through all that, you're like, I don't want to have anything to do with the series ever again. I did like also that you brought up the line about the 1%, because there were a couple moments where like Will Smith like kind of was Will Smith, and you were like the part where he's like, you are clearly not the best at this.
Right.
You're just like, why couldn't you have been like this the whole movie?
Yeah, he did have those moments. There were moments where,
because he's Will Smith, he can't help it, right? He's going to pop up every now and then. But
I think though, I don't know how you guys wrap up, so I apologize, but I think I would recommend someone go watch this. I really do.
If you can see it the way it's intended, I think it's enough of a unique experience.
I don't think
it's
that bad.
By the way, shout out to that Stones River Theater, man. They really did have a good projection.
I rarely see a bad. I will say, I had to watch Godzilla King of the Monsters in 3D, and I don't think this was their fault, because that movie is dark as fuck.
Yeah,
that's been the only bad experience I've had there watching a movie. But,
I would imagine. Now, I'm not sure. I never ran a high frame rate movie when I was a projectionist, but I would imagine that the wattage of that lamp that's in there is super high, because it's got to go through not only the 3D polarizers, but then you have your glasses, and it still looked bright.
Yeah, I thought
too. It literally is twice as bright just because there's twice as many frames.
And
that's how I understand it, at least. And I don't know that I completely process what that means.
And they were in the catacombs, too.
Yeah, but what I've heard is the reason 3D looks so much better in high frame rate is because of the brightness is literally twice as much.
It's got to be.
You're seeing 60 moments of that brightness as opposed to 30 moments.
A theater like that we were in would have probably had a 2,000 or 3,000 watt lamp when I was working at Hollywood 27. That one was definitely like, it had to have been like 6,000 somewhere around there.
And that's probably the most recent AMC in this area, like Middle Tennessee area, because I can't think of one that would have popped, unless there's like maybe like somewhere like Gallatin or something.
But I do get the sense that it's got to be because they have one of the later projectors, because that's why it's not anywhere in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it was in Nashville, you would have gone to one of these theaters and it would have been completely dark. There's no way they would have been able to run it. No way. I can't even imagine. Like there's some theaters that are running 2D that look dark.
Yeah,
and so the fact that this looked so bright is
Solo. Like I felt bad for people that went and saw that in 3D, because I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on in 2D.
I could tell immediately the logos, ironically, served a purpose in that the last two logos from the Chinese companies were in high frame rate, but the first logos,
oh that's funny,
weren't rendered that way.
Right,
they did
could immediately tell when the logo started coming in. I was like, oh, there's the high frame rate.
Yeah,
I didn't notice that. I did have one other thing that I wanted to say. Is that cool?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's this thing that happens in movies, and that is like when a woman fights, there's always this moment when the guy shows up to save her.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trained to expect that in every movie that I watch, where there's a woman that's like fighting for her life. And there's been two movies where a guy hasn't shown up, and it surprised me. The first one was Wonder Woman, when she's fighting in that tower. I didn't realize how much I was expecting her to be saved by a guy, and when he never showed up, I didn't know if I was let down or excited, and I had to think about that for a while. And I was like, oh my God, I'm excited, because she totally stood her own. And in this movie, it happens again. There's this really cool fight scene where she's in this close quarters and she's fighting this guy, and not only does she kick his ass, but then like she turns super dark and torturous.
Yeah.
You know where else that also, it's rare that a guy saves a woman, and this has been going on since like early 80s, is horror movies. Oddly enough.
No, they just get killed.
No, I'm saying women that survive.
Final Girl.
Yeah, the Final Girl, the whole like with the slasher film boom in the 80s, that kind of became a thing where it was always a woman that survived and killed the bad guy, and she was usually by herself. So
that's interesting.
What's interesting is movies have gotten like quote unquote smarter about it, and they'll have the guy still save the day, but then the girl will say something like, "Oh, I had it. You didn't have to."
That
was the next evolution, and now they're actually having the guts to.
Well, and there's a moment when there's three pops, pop, 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 And she says, how many guys did you bring? Because I just heard three. And I just assumed that was going to be pop, pop, pop from like a long distance and the here come the bullets from far away or something. So it's just interesting how we're trained sometimes in stories and narrative and visuals that we're kind of trained, oh, this is what's going to happen next. And in this case, in storytelling, I like to be surprised that there's a good fight scene. So from a female perspective.
That's awesome.
Okay, well, we didn't like this movie, unfortunately. I wanted to very much so. I thought I saw the trailer 6 months ago. I thought it might be good, might be fun, and yeah, disappointed all of us.
I have seen this trailer so many times too. I'm pretty sure, like whenever they started showing this, like middle of the summer, maybe every single movie I've seen has had this trailer in front of it. That doesn't happen all the time. That's a weird thing. So I don't know what it is that they were able to get through to where every movie had this trailer.
Yeah, no idea. I mean, somebody made a deal with somebody.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this one. Go to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We also have CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. Jonathan, you have a Twitter.
We have a TV Sins Twitter, and I'm also at SamLoomis13.
In fact, a lot of people in this room have social media. If you want to talk about this episode, Aaron?
At Aaron Dicer.
At Aaron Dicer. Danae?
At Danae Says.
At Danae Says. And then we also have a Discord. I've been seeing a bunch of people come on Facebook and ask for a link, and I have been giving those links dutifully.
And it's always, we want to talk to Danae.
And they want to talk to Danae. That's all they want to do.
I'm the Sin Missins unicorn.
There should be a category that is just Danae.
Ooh, a place for me to pose crazy stuff.
Yes.
Ooh. That's pretty much already the Behind the Scenes.
Behind the Scenes. Yeah, Behind the Scenes channel or category, she's on there a lot, along with a merry band of fellows. Anyway, that'll do it for this week. It's Chris Atkins and Jonathan Watkins, Aaron Dicer, and Danae Hughes. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.